They blame and shame themselves. That is not taking responsibility, right? But that's what people think. A lot of traders think that when they accuse themselves of not being good enough, or, you know, that they should do better, that this is taking accountability and responsibility. But it's not, right? It's still judging and blaming. Just they judge and blame themselves. So the locus of control is still not within them. It's like with any sports, they have to go back and practice that setup. They have to go back and practice what they didn't do well. They have to go back and practice tricky situations. And that's what these traders don't do. They go and complain and read a trading psychology book. And it's not going to change anything. I always love to start working with my traders on their identity, the story they are telling themselves. Because, you know, from The Wolf of Wall Street, we all know that quote, right? It's the bullshit story that we tell ourselves that stops us from having what we want.
Welcome to the Alpha Mind podcast, where we talk about the behavioral, psychological, and emotional challenges of trading and investing. The Alpha Mind podcast is co-hosted by Stephen Goldstein and Mark Randall. We are delighted to have back on the podcast with us Mandy Rafsanjani, a brilliant performance coach from Australia who specializes in working with traders. And as you can hear from those excerpts at the beginning of this episode, she has some fantastic views and reflections on trading, which she shares with us today. The Alpha Mind podcast is sponsored by the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. The STA are the world's leading body for the advancement of technical analysis and run fantastic education programs, diplomas, meetings and conferences on themes connected to technical analysis and trading price action. You can find out more about them on their website, technicalanalysts.com. As our sponsoring partner, the STA are delighted to offer listeners of the Alpha Mind podcast a discount on their outstanding STA home study course and STA home study course and diploma program. You can find out details about this by going to the Alpha Mind blog, which you can find at alphamindblog.blogspot.com, or just Googling Alpha Mind blog and then go to the link STA home study course at the top of the page. Now on with this week's podcast.
Well, welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast, and we're delighted to have Mandy Rafsanjani with us, and that's a name that you recall from the early days of the Alpha Mind podcast. Mandy was on then. She's linked to market wizard Linda Raske. She's down there in Australia, and if you look at her profile, it's kind of it reads the same as the profile of both Steve and myself, so... Yeah, she's a professional trader, but she is also a coach, a very highly regarded, recognized coach with a background looking at the psychology of success. I know she's into yoga principles and Buddhism and mindfulness and neuroscience and behavior finance. And you'd have heard all of that from Steve and I over like 100 and whatever sessions so far. But it's good for us to just get this different perspective and remind ourselves that, you know, the world evolves at a different pace. In different places, and thinking of all of us continues to evolve. So we kind of want to hear what's new from Mandy, you know, what's going on, and, you know, and I'm sure there's deeper things we can go into in this podcast, which is going to be really around the what drives success in trading. So, you know, give us a bit more, Mandy. Tell us what's going on, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm always excited to talk to you guys because you're also trained coaches. And we know there's a lot of coaches out there who think because they have made a few bucks, they can be coaches. But we all know that being a coach, there's so much more to it. And so it's always exciting to, you know, talk to the likes of you and Denise, Shal, and, you know, Brett Steinberger, like, you know, the trained version. So, I think what kicked off or what sparked Steve's invitation to come back onto the show was a tweet that I put out when I was at Linda's. And I spoke to Linda. Linda had a situation, and it was to her detriment, right? So something didn't go well. And she was really cranky about it, but she gets over that so quick, right? So she's angry in the moment, and then she moves on. And I said to her, how do you do that? You know, what was it that helped you to leave that in the past, because, you know, it was quite significant. It would have pissed me off for a while. And she said, look, it starts with radical responsibility. And her favorite word is actually accountability. And which is similar but not the same, in my opinion. I think accountability is more where we say, I'm at the cause of my life, I take charge. But radical responsibility is even more than that, where even when we know that there were external circumstances that created the outcome, which in Linda's case, that was the case, it was something out of her control, that we still say, to some extent, it was up to me. Like, how did I create the situation? Now, this is often so misunderstood. You know, there's this saying, we can't control the outcome, but we can control how we respond to it. And this is very superficially looked at. And as I said, misunderstood, because it can mean so many different things. Like, what does it even mean? You can control how you react. Like, you know, so many traders say to me, but I'm really, really angry. I can't control that. So it's not about that you control your anger or that you control your emotions. It's that you say, I react to this situation in a way that's not helping me to improve or to reach my goal. So we all know where anger leads. If it is unchecked, it leads to overtrading. It leads to going on tilt, leads to revenge trading. And when we learn to become accountable and say, okay, I'm really angry now and I need to manage my emotions and navigate that anger and re-parent myself or, you know, regulate my emotion, whatever it is for the individual, for everyone, something different, that is radical responsibility and accountability. So that's how our conversation started, actually, on Twitter.
Absolutely.
That's interesting to say those things. And the thing that stood out for me was that actually managing your emotional journey is far more difficult than trading.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they focus on the trading because they want to make the trading better, but the last thing they focus on is actually managing their emotional journey, which is going to go on. And as a consequence, their trading is compromised.
Yeah.
So there's this, and I know that Steve always talks about performance gap and its the ability to reset and recover back to performance, having taken some sort of shock, which is the really massive differentiator in any performance activity. Yeah.
That's actually really interesting, Mark, because I asked Linda once what her superpower is, and she said that she isn't necessarily one of the best traders in terms of knowing how to trade, but she can come back from being down really quick. Like when she takes a hit, she just buckles up, she focuses, she gets all external distractions out of her life, and then she catches up. Now, I always compare her with a famous racehorse here in Australia called Winx. And so Winx is unbeaten. She's like 25 races and never beaten. And what she did in typical Winx fashion, she would be very slow at the beginning, you know, taking her time, clowning around, didn't want to really run. And then towards the end of the race, she would just focus and, you know, go really fast and just overtake everyone and win each and every time. And Linda has that capability. She's mentally so strong that it doesn't kick her off kilter, knock her off kilter. You know, it creates the opposite. When something happens that is out of her control, once she was on a plane and during the time there was an event and she had an enormous loss. Well, of course she was angry, but then she really buckles down and she comes back from it really quick. And knowing that, because she knows that she has that capability, makes her such a consistent high performer for over 40 years.
Yeah, hi, Mandy. Great to have you back on the show. And as we said just before we started, it's lovely to hear your dulcet tones, which we still think are the best. You have the best voice we've had on the show in 4 years. And You're just proving that again today.
Thank you.
But it's great to have your wisdom as well. And, you know, like you said, you're a coach as well. You're a trained coach. And there is a big difference between a lot of people who call themselves coaching and people such as ourselves who have had many years of training. And I don't think people realize exactly what going through the learning process of coaching is. And every coach knows that even if they've been doing it 10, 15, 20 years, they're still learning. And
In trading.
Yes. You said so many incredible things there that I just sort of written note after note after note. And they all seem to tie together, funnily enough. So I'm going to just, you know, you talk about this radical responsibility. And one of the reasons why that jumped off of the Twitter page and into my head in such a strong way when you said it was, first of all, I knew you'd been out there with Linda for a few weeks. We'd been out there, but we unfortunately were unable to meet with Linda. We were going to go meet with her, but
she said she was so sick on that day, and she was really sad that she had to cancel, but she just couldn't travel. So next
these things happen, but next time.
Yeah.
I'd also just finished reading a book called Extreme Ownership, which is by two U.S. Navy SEALs, Jocko Willink and Leif Babin.
I've heard of it, yeah.
The book was highly recommended by a client who just said, Steve, you have to read this book. You know, this is so much my philosophy. It's, you know, it is literally taking ownership and accepting responsibility for everything which goes on in your world.
Yeah.
You know, even if, you know, you weren't directly at fault, the idea is that, you know, in some way you are, you know, that some way that there's no accidents and that you need to accept what happened, accept your role in it, or even your role in an omission that led to it. And, you know, the book is a brilliant book. It's about that kind of extreme accountability, which is what you said. And ironically, the client who told me to read it is a massive fan of Linda's. And he follows Linda. He's read her work. He listens to all her podcasts. But what he loves about her is her attitude. Again, he doesn't follow how she trades. He doesn't trade in the same way. So you said what made her such a great trader is her mental strength, her mental approach to trading, her attitude. It's not just about finding a system or a method. That's quite easy. It's about having the mental aptitude that goes with that. And we call letting go, which is what it seems like you're talking about, as the superpower behind every great trader we've ever worked with. They're not always the best stock pickers or identifiers of trends. They don't have the best methods or systems necessarily. They don't know more than anyone else. But what they have is that same sort of mental fortitude, mental presence, focus on purpose, the ability to let go, which I think you're talking about here. So there is that letting go element, which again we always call the super skill of all the great traders we've ever worked with. And that thing you said there about, you know, we all have these catchphrases, you know, like you said, control what you cannot control certain things, but you can control yourself. Most people are superficial around using those terms. They're great, and it's always great to remember them. But the ability to actually practice that in the real world, in real life, is that's that mental fortitude, that extreme ownership, which I think you talked about.
Absolutely, and it's even more than that, Stephen. So when we look at traders who don't have that mental fortitude, like what is going on for them? What is missing for them? And I'm sure you have the same experience where they come to you and they feel somehow helpless, Right? They're like, I'm at the mercy of my emotions. I get impulsive. I get compulsive. I can't stop myself doing stupid things. And they feel that they need something on the outside to change so that they can be better. So when you look at the ocean test, right, it's the locus of control for them is outside of them. With Linda, the locus of control is within her, like she's in charge. She decides what's happening in her life to a certain extent, of course. Right? So that's the taking the responsibility and the accountability. And they don't really have a fighting spirit as well. What they fight is themselves. But what Linda fights is her ability to read the markets. Like she's like focusing down. Like you see that in Rafael Nadal, right? The tennis player. He is the same. He comes back from being down and he has this immense ability to focus and to come back and to fight. And I think that's why he's winning so much. It's his fighting spirit. So when we look at traders who feel that their locus of control is outside of them, what is it that they do? They blame, they shame. And whom do they blame and shame? Themselves. And so when they blame and shame themselves, that is not taking responsibility, right? But that's what people think. A lot of traders think that when they accuse themselves of not being good enough or, you know, that they should do better, that this is taking accountability and responsibility. But it's not, right? It's still judging and blaming, just they judge and blame themselves. So the locus of control is still not within them. And the question is now, how do we bring that back into their and how do we bring the locus of control back to them, that they feel that they know that they have the confidence and the trust that they are in charge? And that's what our work is all about, right, Stephen, to show them that they are not at the mercy of life. They can do it too. They have the ability to cut a loss. They have the ability to withstand all the fears and let the profits run. But what does it take? And it's like with any sports. They have to go back and practice that setup. They have to go back and practice what they didn't do well. They have to go back and practice tricky situations. And that's what these traders don't do. They go and complain and read a trading psychology book. And it's not going to change anything. And that's where the helplessness comes in. It's not that they are that they were born victims. It's not that they're bad people. This is how they have been trained to behave as children, to fit into the family unit, to meet the needs of their parents or their siblings. And it's no one has bad intentions, it's just how we humans are. But when we have an understanding and an awareness for it, then we can change something, right? So we can say, wow, I've been trained to complain and to create drama so that my parents maybe give me attention, just, you know, just as an example. But I know this is not going to help me to become a better trader. I need to go back on the course. And I don't know, when you and I were trading or started trading, Stephen, there was no such thing as trading sim and live market replay. We didn't have those tools, right? But now these tools are available, so traders can go back into the arena and practice their skill. So, for example, I had a trader who stuffed up 2 days ago. And he emailed me like this long email and he was so upset. And he's like, you need to tell me, what do I do? How can I stop this behavior? And oh my God, he was so angry and really upset with himself. And I asked him one question. I said, what did you do after, you know, you went on tilt? He said, I went for dinner and I sent you these emails. And I'm like, did you go back and look at your trades? And he said, no. So that's what we need to retrain. Another trader that I retrained is that every time he takes a loss, he's like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Oh, man, I lost that money. I need to get that money back. What's wrong with me? We all know that self-talk, right? So what I train him is to love losses. So every time he takes a loss, I'm like, you are a rock star. I love taking losses. Because when we say we hate something, we don't want to do it, right? And there is this guy that Steve Ward got me onto a few years ago, The Way of the Champion, Jerry Lynch, I think is his name. And he's a coach, performance coach for athletes, athletics. And he lets his little athletics run around the course, and they have to say, I hate running. I don't want to run. It hurts so much. I'm so tired. And then takes the time, and then they have to run again and say, I can do this. I love that pain. I love that pain because I'm the top 1%, because most people would have already given up. And they perform much better. So we can take that principle into trading now and practice taking losses as well. That is moving the locus of control back to us.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I used to have a mantra when I was a trader when I was a professional trader all those years ago, which I didn't have early in my career. But, you know, hearing you talk about it, you really reminded me of it. And it was learn to love your losses. And I had that written on my screen at the bottom in a big yellow, you know, sticky notepad right there so I could see it. Love your losses. And I talk about this often with people. I've said it on the podcast a couple of times. I talk about it with my clients, and they're like, are you mad? Why would I love my losses? And I said, of course, no one loves losses. You know, we would like to go through life with no losses, but do you know what? They are part of life. And if you're not going to have them, you're never going to win. You know, I said that losses are your capital. You know, they're going to come along. They're going to come along regularly. And if you don't want losses, the first rule is don't place a trade. That's number one. So you stop placing trades. Number two is you start looking for certainty. And as we know, there is no certainty. And the moment you look for certainty, you're looking for sure things. And sure things just don't exist in this world. It's a world of risk. So you're looking for the impossible. And then you go down a rabbit hole from there onwards. You know, you see a great setup, you see a great trade. With a great setup, you have to take it when the potential risk reward is still good. It's still worth taking. If you wait for that moment where, yeah, this looks the real certainty, you know, the odds of this succeeding are 80, 90%. Well, then your risk return is awful at that point. You know, it's not something which you want. It's not part of the system you're trading. You know, so, you know, you have to dive in there. So the idea of learn to love your losses was actually for me, it was to break me out of these behaviors and to remind me that, you know, I'm looking for high risk reward setups. I'm not a regular trader who wanted to win 90% of the time. I probably won something like 15 to 20% of the time, because I always wanted high risk reward setups. And part of that is cutting quickly when they don't work out. So I had to learn to love my losses, because I was going to have a lot of them.
Yeah, especially you were one of those traders who had like a, I don't know, 40-60 profit loss ratio, because you took lots of little losses, but then you got the runners.
Well, I was closer to 80-20, if I'm honest.
Yeah, nice.
So, yeah. But the wins were multiple times bigger, you know, and with that method, you can get the occasional multi-bagger.
And that's what I see with most successful traders. They have these kind of ratios and make an insane amount of money. And then we look at the prop firms who require traders to make 10% in a month, and it's like, even the best traders don't do that consistently. Like, how can you request it from retail traders? It's just, I don't think it's okay. But, you know, I mean, people choose to join those prop firms, so it's a different story. But, yeah, that's, you know, that you are someone who has an 80-20 profit loss ratio actually speaks for you and your skill and your mental toughness. Right. And, you know, when someone says to me, oh, I hate taking losses, I call bullshit. I'm like, really? If you would really hate losses, why do you then go and tilt and make more losses? Because you know you make more losses. So doesn't make sense, does it? And then they're like all scrambled and like, what?
It doesn't. And the other side to that, mm-hmm. the other side of that is that there's the other approach, which is not my style, where you do have a high win rate. Then yeah. you've got to be actually willing to, in those ones, you actually let your losses run a bit, you know, because you're playing a mean reversion game where you're hoping they come back. And in that way, you have to embrace, you know, less losses, but probably bigger ones relative to your wins.
Yeah.
You know, which
you have
are
to endure the
often
pain.
The style. Yeah. The style of those type of prop verb styles, where they often win about 80 or 90% of the time, but they quickly take the profits and they have to play that mean reversion game with the losses. And,
yeah.
you know, that's okay as well. You know, it's whatever style works for you. The important thing is being able to take either fast losses or to be able to let the losses run a little bit. And both of those mess with people's heads. It messes with my head. You know, it messed with my head, even though I did it. And that was why I came up with a mantra. You know, it's like, you know, I used to go home and go, you know, I'd beat myself up. We all do. We're human. We can't help it. you know.
That's a way of handling pressure and stress, though, the beating yourself up.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's how we deal with the stress.
Yeah. But like you say, let go quickly. And I know Mark is brilliant. I'm going to bring Mark in here because, you know, Mark's brilliant at that. He's worked a lot on mindfulness, you know, in the moment presence. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, Mark, let's hear what you have to say about that.
I think it's just sort of joining into that conversation to start with. You know, it's about not about the next trade; it's about the next 1,000 trades, and kind of setting the intention and your expectation at the beginning, and kind of just knowing that is really important. And of course, the letting go bit is useful, but of course, you need to know what you're letting go of to start with, which is sometimes people get confused and don't let go of the right thing. And also the trade cycle, you know, it's letting go of the outcome of a trade. I mean, I know the focus of this part of the conversation has been upon losses, but it's also about not getting too carried away about making lots of money in a row, because then you become complacent, you think you've got, and you drop all the process. So process is really, really important to get to an outcome. To accept the outcome, I think acceptance of outcome is really important, and know where it stands in the bigger picture of your, you know, of your journey of trading, and then to have honesty and perhaps even accepting vulnerability of knowing what you need to let go of to get yourself into a better state to then see the next trade. Because if you don't let go, you get caught in what we call death spiral and go back to acting. And, you know, it's one trade follows the other, and you drop process and you get an accumulation of stuff that becomes almost a tragedy, to the point it becomes such a big problem. It's perhaps even difficult to let go of it because you've just created this negative monster. It could be an overly positive monster as well. So I think the concept of trying to just be balanced and just treat things as outcome-based, set an intention, accepting that, you know, we're all quite fragile. And, you know, if you want to get into performance, we need to accept that every now and then we can be quite fragile and need to get ourselves back on track. And if we don't have a way of getting back on track, then you know, we have a problem. We can get quite frustrated about, you know, feeling capable of taking on what's next, even if it's a fairly simple task. So I think having a plan of attack, it's a bit like going into battle with a sword but forgetting your shield. You know, so we need to have this. If you're going to go and fight in the markets, just make sure you've got some sort of defense structure, because you're going to be getting hits from external sources and internal, because you start to be battling yourself as well, and you've got nothing to deal with that, but you're still expected to go and fight, then you know you're going to lose that fight. So you're going to lose the battle with trading. But I think people in the trading world are too keen to grab the sword and just go out there without thinking about it, rather than, you know, if you were a kid and you said, you're going to be a Roman centurion, you know, go and fight your buddy. He's going to be a Roman centurion as well. You're going to take your shield with you. You're going to put your guard on. You're going to put your plates on your legs. As a kid, you're just thinking, you know, I've got to make sure I defend myself, get my sword, go out there and go for a fight. As an adult, because, you know, the crazy world of trading, it's like, okay, I've got my sword. I think I know how to trade. I'm just going for it. And then you just can't deal with the emotional baggage, the pressure, and all the various other adjective words we can call trading, and, you know, what it does to you. And things get messed up.
We will return to this fascinating podcast shortly. If you are planning to upskill yourself as a trader or an analyst, or want to improve your chances of landing a job in the finance industry, the STA Home Study course may be what you are looking for. Developed by many of the leading minds in technical analysis and based on the STA's diploma program that was delivered at the London School of Economics, this course may be ideal for you. AlphaMind listeners can obtain a discount on the cost of this course. To find out more about this offer, Google AlphaMind blog or go to alphamindblog.blogspot.com and hit the STA study course tab at the top of the screen. Now back to the podcast. I love what you said there, Mark, and I want to put a question to both you and Mandy here, because we've raised this concept of radical responsibility. We've talked about the importance of being able to accept, let go, and then get closure on that. And move on really quickly. Otherwise, we can end up going into this death spiral, going on tilt, all sorts of bad stuff can follow, which starts from that first not letting go. The question I get asked a lot, and I'm sure you get asked a lot, Mandy, it is almost like it's inherent in those questions that your trader has asked from a couple of days ago, and I know we get it asked an awful lot, Mark. How, and this is where I want to draw on your mindfulness, you know, you are a titan of the mindfulness world, as we know, that ability to be extreme, to almost demonstrate extreme presence in the moment as it's all falling apart around you, as you're in that heat of the battle, okay, so that you can then practice these super skills of letting go. That's what everyone asks, how do you get there? You know, how do you do that when you're under fire and it's all falling around you?
Yeah, so let me just – no, it's a super question. I think it's all about understanding the fact that a lot of people think, I'm kind of set in my ways. I've got this negative mindset. I've got this negative bias. Everything I look at is a tragedy, and I'm just in this agitated state that's just not calm. Well, give you a clue, up until the point you died, the fact that we have neuroplasticity opportunity with the brain, we can fire that brain up in a very different way by, you know, adopting, you know, mindfulness practice itself helps to build a better interconnectivity of what's going on in the brain that actually gives you a slightly positive outlook rather than a slightly negative one. It also gives you a sense of being able to look at yourself through the eyes of a third party, to just watch yourself in performance and to be aware of what state you are at any given level. Now, I'm totally convinced that most sport high performers have some sort of mindfulness, mind fitness program going on to just make sure that they are prepared before the fight. I think that's the important thing. So it's getting yourself in a sort of proactive, let's just kit myself out with the tools and the defense mechanisms through mindfulness practice that allows you to hit life with a degree of confidence that, as Mandy said, from Linda's reflection, that you can bounce back quickly and knowing that you can bounce back. So I think if you know that you can bounce back after a shock, you're willing to walk into a shock because shocks are going to happen, and you have comfort with a negative shock because you know that you've got a method that's already in your system because you've been practicing, you've been building these skills, and they're just there, because after a while, they're just there. And they come in automatically to support you. And that thus becomes a superpower in trading, an absolute superpower. And it's just not discussed enough that people just think, oh, it's all about staying calm. No, it's about actually having the ability to rewire your brain to be totally managing you without you knowing you're managing yourself, so that when you come across you know, the things like letting, the need to let go, or the need to deal with something negative, or the need to be great at a moment of high tension but still perform, because of course that happens midway through your trade. Something could drastically change that trade, and you don't need to be going on tilt at that moment. You need to be going back to calmness, back to clear mind thinking, back to agile growth mindset. You know, that needs to be there. And if you've not kind of figured out or done work on yourself to create that base and that confidence, then you're not going to be able to deal with that pressure very well at all. In fact, what happens is that, as Steve's wonderful comment, that you become owned by the market. You know, the market's just got grabbed you by the neck and has taken you on the emotional journey of the trade, and you're then compromising your internal system. And then that makes you a very difficult person to be with socially. And so your implications beyond just you as a trader, and you're carrying that home with you, you're carrying that to bed with you. And, you know, we know that over time that can compromise your mental health. And of course, that's not a great place to be trading from. So, yeah, I hope I've not over answered your question, but that's what the skill is. So if you can pump yourself up with a protective layer, then you can walk into this world of trading with confidence. And I think Linda reflects that in that conversation with Mandy, that, and if you don't have that, then you hit stuff thinking, what do I do now? You know, you have to think about it. Actually, if you don't need to think about protection, that is one hell of a superpower.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I think, Mandy, you kind of alluded to that as well, that we go into trading not prepared for that. We take our life experiences to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the mindfulness approach. And again, you know, so very grateful to Steve Ward, who I met in a very, very difficult time of my life. And, I was so anxious and so, life was just in upheaval. Like, mindfulness meditation would have not helped, because it would have triggered even more anxiety. And what he taught me was the mindful minute, because that's all I could do at that time. And again, he was so amazing. He knew that. So he didn't even try to get me into meditation, right? He was just start with that. So the mindful minute is simply where you take you count to 60 seconds, and you count the breaths that you're naturally taking during those 60 seconds. And I think at the time it was like 10 or 12, like a lot. And I could take that with me everywhere. So, you know, I would be queuing up and I would just do my mindful minute and just focus on my 12 breaths. Now I'm down to 6 breaths a minute, like 5 or 6 even, which shows, you know, how much my mental state has improved since then. But, you know, as I said, a lot of traders, they, when trading is so stressful for them, they can't meditate, they can't do as much mindfulness as would be helpful for them, but that's where they then can start. And meditation itself has been proven to trigger anxiety for some people, so it's not good for everyone. It's if you don't have anxiety, it's fine. If you do have anxiety, it makes it worse. And that's where mindfulness comes in. And again, there has been so many MRI scans that show how mindfulness changes your brain matters, the gray matters, and so on, and how useful that is. Having said that, alongside with this, I always love to look at the beliefs that my traders have learned growing up. So what I found really interesting, Stephen, Mark, is when I start with casual conversations, because I want to know how my traders communicate, what they say. I mean, there's so many clues for us in it, right, in the conversations. And the traders who already do well, who come to me, who want to scale up and become more functional and better, they usually say, I want to do well because I want to make my parent or my wife, my family, someone proud. The traders that are struggling, guess what they say? I can't do well because I'm afraid I disappoint my family. And so now we already know, when someone comes to the mindset of, I'm afraid of disappointing my family, then they can't do well because it will stand in the way of them taking their losses. It will stand in the way of them letting their profits run, whatever that means, right? I mean, take your losses and let your profits run. Linda and I, we were talking about it. It's just a stupid saying because it doesn't mean anything, right? It's so ambiguous, and it just makes traders feel bad because then they come and say, oh, I didn't let my profits run. Well, there's a little bit more to it than just saying that, right? So number one, what's your exit strategy? Can you improve your exit strategy? Do you know how to distinguish between a reversal, a mean reversion, or a retracement pattern? Right? That's where most traders fall over. It's not mindset, it's skill set. Right? So then you can already look at, I always say, all the patterns that you have right now, maybe that you avoid taking losses. So an avoidance strategy, right? You have learned that as a child. Who taught you? Because now we know when you have learned it, you can also unlearn it and learn something new, right? And when we understand the past, and look, not everybody needs to understand the past. I found that most, when they understand their past and how all their behaviors got formed, when they understand it, it takes this enormous burden off them. And they're like, oh, it's not who I am. It's just what I do. Like, they heard that before, but now they really get it. And then we can start creating a new future. So another of the ocean tests is, are you someone who habitually looks into the past, who's past focused, who keeps bringing up all the stupid things that they did in the past? And that's why they don't deserve to be successful in trading. And when I ask my traders, so a trader who says to me, oh, I don't deserve to be successful, right? So I'm looking at limiting beliefs. Why can't you take your losses? Why do you do that behavior that you do? I don't deserve. Okay, give me 10 reasons why you don't deserve. And they're like, number one, number two, number three, number four. They know immediately what to say. And then I say to them, now, tell me why you deserve. And they have no answers. And I ask, what is your superpower? And they have no answer. And so now we know we have found a gap, right? So let's look at, why do you deserve to be a successful trader? And if maybe you don't deserve it, right? Maybe you have screwed up in the past so badly that you need some redemption. But then let's do that for you. What do you need to do so that you know you deserve it? And, you know, some traders say to me, I'm not good enough. And I say, yeah, maybe you're not good enough. Let's have a look. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. Let's look at your statistics. And then we can, you know, let's look at your plan. Let's look at your strategy. Let's look at your risk management. Then we know if you're good enough or not. And if you're not, then, well, we can fix it. Or maybe we find out that you are good enough. What does that even mean, being good enough, right? So let's define that first. Let's create some benchmarks for good enough. And now we have something tangible that we can work on. And when we now bring mindfulness to that experience, it's like mindfulness is like the accelerator, right? It's like the turbocharger of your trading car. So yeah, that's how I like to think and work with my traders.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the use of the term mindfulness, because there is still a little connotation around there that it's something spiritual, it's something that not a hard skill. It's you know, people are a bit, as one of my clients said, icky about it. But
look at the statistics, yeah. Look at the research, right? There's absolutely so much brain research now that shows black and white what the benefits are.
What I think it is successful people have been doing it all along, but it's never got given a name. It didn't have a name.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who's performed successfully at anything, be they an entrepreneur, be they a sports person, you know, a leader in some sort of field, you know, they've been practicing mindfulness. They've been doing it without realizing it. You know, I've been fascinated when you watch the start of the 100 meters final in the Olympics. Every single one of those runners is on the front line, just completely shutting out the world and the noise.
Yeah.
And then even if they didn't have the term mindfulness, they are doing it, you know. So what's happened is people have suddenly kind of honed in on that and are kind of going, what is the things that experts, the very best, are doing? And if it's, even though it's our name, but they've been doing it for years, they've been doing mindfulness. And I think that's where, you know, this has grown out on. they're kind of using mindfulness-based approaches in everything they do. So they're stronger. And what it really is this is that, you know, bringing that ability to be mindful in the moment, be mindful of what you're doing, be mindful of what you're doing when things go wrong, be mindfully present. And like Mark said, you know, having that already there at the start so that when it happens, you've got that kind of suit of armor on and you're able to survive it.
Yeah, and mindfulness also helps with building self-efficacy. Right? So when you learn to be present in the moment, you learn that you have control over yourself. Your mind starts wandering. You bring it back. You learn you have control over yourself. So self-control suddenly becomes an experience that's possible. And so a lot of traders,
just emphasizing the fact that when I started, it was just this stuff I did. And I'm sure that if it was wrapped up as how mindfulness is positioned nowadays, sometimes I perhaps wouldn't have bothered with the stuff I did because it had this name that, like as Stevie said, is a bit icky and perhaps is positioned in a very, very wrong way within society, which is why I think we're adopting more of a trade of mind fitness type sort of positioning of the development of cognitive self as the way for people to accept it as a skill set that's definitely worth acquiring. But it is a way of being. It's a way of just turning up for whatever you're turning up for in the sense of just being tuned into where you are in real time in the right state. And no one's going to be perfect. So, you know, even the greatest practitioners ever are going to drift around in that state, but it's being aware of that you've drifted and bringing yourself back to optimal performance at the right time in performance is also the advantage of it, that awareness of self.
What is the opposite of mindfulness? Mindlessness.
Oh, it is,
And what happens when you're mindless? That's when all that noise, that uncertainty about yourself, your demons, your inner demons, your self-doubts,
you're offline. If you can imagine mindfulness being you're online, tuned in, I mean, you're offline stroke off, you know, when you're the opposite. And if you're sort of off, but you're still trying to perform, yeah, good luck.
You know, and that's what so many traders say, oh, my God, I don't know what happened. I look back and suddenly had all these trades and I went like, on a trading binge, I was on autopilot and I didn't even realize. So that's when the mind is off, right?
And that is a performance gap.
That's true, yes. And most people that are performing are operating off. That's why they're average, below average performers.
That takes us back to radical responsibility. That lovely phrase which you used, Mandy.
You know, exactly. And when we apply radical responsibility, then again we realize that we are at the course of our lives and that becomes part of our identity. I always love to start working with my traders on their identity, the story they are telling themselves. Because, you know, from The Wolf of Wall Street, we all know that quote, right? It's the bullshit story that we tell ourselves that stops us from having what we want. And again, it's a beautiful quote, but traders don't know or people don't know what to do with it. I didn't. I had to learn that myself. But that's really where it starts. And if you practice mindfulness, it becomes part of your identity. And, you know, when you don't feel like doing your mindfulness practice and you still do it, in that moment you have experienced yourself that you can have control and discipline. And that then can continue with, I don't know, other little practices where you don't feel like doing, like if you can't, you know, if you can't go to the gym every day, knowing that it will prolong your life and take care of you emotionally and physically in all areas, right? Your mind works better. how do you want to be a successful trader if you can't even do those little things, those little promises that you make yourself, and you let yourself down and you allow yourself to have excuses and not to follow through? And so that's all creating our identity. I am someone who is not disciplined. Great, I can see that, because you keep making promises, not to yourself, but to other people as well, and you're not showing up for them. Let's change that. Before you change that, you can never be successful. Now, on the flip side, I have traders who are like enormously successful and they never keep their promises. They're messy as hell, right? When we go on Zoom, the room is like, oh my God, you know, you need to clean up your room. But they don't have that problem of lack of discipline in trading. So we don't need to work on that, right? So just want to clarify that as well.
Well, some of them thrive in that environment. You know, we're all different. We're all cut from a different, you know, we're all cut from the same cloth, but it takes on different shades. And there's some people I know that just work in these crazy ways. And if you gave them too much structure, their trading would fall apart.
Would fall apart, exactly. Yeah,
that's who they are. That's why we always say, trade who you are, not who you want to be.
Exactly.
You know, that comes back to that thing you said about your identity and knowing who you are.
Yeah.
That becomes the edge.
What is also interesting, Steve, is relationship with money. So it's working with a trader, super interesting. So phenomenal, successful guy in other areas and lost everything, is, you know, doing like just minimal work now. And I'm like, what was going on? So he builds his accounts up from like 1,000 to 50,000, loses it all. And it's like, you have the ability, like I've never seen anyone do what you do, right? I see his stats and then lose it all. Like, what's going on? So it turned out that he came from an environment where the father ran away, father being in jail and not taking care of the family, like really, really, really sad for the children. The mother then having to fight being on social security. So cutting a long story short, his fear was that if he becomes wealthy, that he will become a bastard like his father. And that's why he's so smart. Like, oh my God, he's got like several uni degrees, like MBAs. He's super smart. But that fear of ending up being so mean because the father then used money to control the mother and, you know, was into drug dealings. That was what stopped him, but he wasn't consciously aware of it. And he meditates a lot, by the way, Mark. So he's like, because I didn't know what was going on. And he said, look, let me meditate on it. And then he came back and he's like, when I think of money, I have these icky thoughts of my father. And then we were able to dig deep and then we saw the connection. That was the reason why he had to sabotage his trading accounts and just give it all back to keep himself small and contained, that he stays a good person. Wow. And so we needed to do some belief change on that. And I said to him, if you were really wealthy from trading, which you have proven that you can, because yeah, I've seen your stats, whom would you be like? Now write out a story of what being a wealthy trader looks like for you. And then we need to start ingraining that into the new pathways. And so a little bit more work to be done, but now we know what it is.
Yeah, that's very interesting, having sort of defining role models that you want to aspire to be. And I remember that there was this really cool kid at school that I just thought, this guy's he's always cool, right? I started to mimic him, you know, I guess. And even to the point where I thought, yeah, that kind of like his wardrobe was so cool. Oh, yeah, okay, let's see if I couldn't afford the shops he went to. Well, let's sort of get something close to that image. And a number of years later, 10 years later, I was sort of in a pub talking to a friend of mine that was also at school at the same time that knew this other guy. And he said to me, do you know, you're really, really like that, I won't mention his name. And I'd sort of realized that I'd sort of I had sort of chosen someone to be like, and people were noticing there are bits of me that had acquired those sort of those bits of personality, that bits of image had turned up in me. So it's quite interesting when you sort of almost nominate in a positive way someone to want to be like and have the same traits, and you're not going to be exactly like them, but if you look up to them and feel that you're sort of shadowing and copying them, then that's a very interesting way of developing yourself. And I think that's what your client or whatever was saying, that it almost focused on the wrong role model. When he adjusted to a different, more positive role model that he could observe and be like, things started to change. It's a different part of psychology, but I think it's nonetheless a very interesting story to share that, and we can all do that at any point in our life. You have to choose the right role model.
That comes back to self-awareness, right? Because every child models, I mean, we all know children modeling their parents. Don't do as I say, do as I do, right? And walk your talk. And unconsciously we model people. So the question is, whom did we model or whom did we reject? Thinking that, so in his case, he did not want to model his father, but rather than doing the opposite and being kind and generous and doing charity. So the locus of control was external from him, because if the locus of control would be internally, he would be saying, I'm going to be wealthy and enjoy life to the fullest, but I'm going to do good. But what he did was he was blocking what he needed to do. What would make him happy and to live a fulfilled life out of that modeling, what not to do from his father. But what I found really fascinating, Mark, was that really he said to me, I need to meditate on it. And then the next day he came up with that. And it's so powerful, right? That really shortcut our coaching tremendously because of the meditation work.
Yeah, I think it's just useful in many shapes and forms. And meditate might be just going for a walk, you know. I think it's sort of, sometimes it's framed into almost just going just taking yourself away, which to some extent is beneficial. But actually, as you say, sometimes if people have issues, taking yourself away and being even more siloed sometimes can add to the problem. But finding something that works for you, like, you know, changing your state or going for a quick walk, just taking in nature, that type of immersion in life, is as useful and as practical and perhaps sellable, you know, sort of, you know, how do you sell this to somebody? So look, just get up and go for a walk. And when you go for a walk, just be where you are and just tune in to where you are. I mean, that's good. For me, that's good enough, you know?
And if you want to interact with other people, right? When you interact with other people, it puts things to perspective, because I found for myself as well, when I'm just behind my computer on my own and I make a stupid mistake and you know, and then lose a bunch of money, that is like so magnified and dramatic in that moment. But when I then go out and, you know, go to the shops and I think this poor girl is working for $15 an hour, and it puts things to perspective for me, and then it's not as dramatic anymore. So, but also, you know, what we need to talk about is, again, what I see a lot in our industry is alcoholism, drugs, because they don't know how to deal with the immense pressure. And I was really annoyed because I posted that saying from Sharapova, right? And she said, you know, how you don't feel good enough even when you're the best. And then someone made the stupid comment like, yeah, you know, then you take drugs. Like anyone who has been in high performance environments knows that it's incredibly hard to deal with all the stresses. And I don't know if she took drugs or not, doesn't matter to me. She's still an amazing sports person. And so mindfulness, again, would help with the emotional regulation. Or I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but here in Australia, emotional fitness is just, you know, the buzzword at the moment. And helps us to become emotionally fit. So we don't need to tap into external solutions, external locus of control like alcohol and drugs. we know we can self-regulate because we have learned to deal with it.
You know, I'm sort of listening to you, and I'm mindful of the time, and we've got to sort of start bringing this to a close soon. But it's just an incredible conversation. It's gone off in so many different directions. And I just want to bring it to one thing, which is kind of maybe implicit in some of the things we've been talking about here. And I think you kind of captured it there, Mandy, that as coaches, our interaction with our clients and what the clients do and what they get from the coaching, you know, you talked about they go to drugs, they go to alcoholism, they go to gambling, which often comes out in their trading as well. So their trading goes from on process where they're applying a rigid or not a rigid, but a structural or strategic mentality to just going everywhere and on tilt and what have you. And often because it's impossible to be mindful all the time, this mindlessness comes in, these demons come in, these things from our past. Now, how often have I been in coaching conversations, and I'm sure you have, and I know Mark has, where people are just talking and they're just downloading what's going on in their head, and they're saying things without realizing it, that we as coaches are trained to identify, to spot, to note, to listen for, and we will, when they finish talking, or if we've noticed them repetitively say the things over the weeks that we haven't quite gone into yet, we will go back to them and say, that thing you mentioned, that, you know, you were talking about that, or, you know, can we just go back to that? And they go, well, they didn't even realize they said it often. And we'll say, well, you've mentioned it three or four times in different ways. So it's in there and it's coming out, and you talking about it is allowing it to come out. And you start honing in on that. And then that becomes the thing that is getting in the way that you start exploring. And I mean, in this bit here, this is where I say, wow, this is why coaching is so valuable. This is, you know, we know very few people, you know, who enter the world of trading, enter this form of coaching, this performance coaching, this going into what's happening internally for them, not externally. Everyone, as you said at the very beginning, and I was as guilty as it for the first 15 years of my trading career, looks for the answers out there, right? That's the skill set. That's where you apply your skills. That's where you play the outer game. And you have to do that. You have to build those, and you have to keep building those. But the real ability is that the mind games, the ones you play with yourself. You know, as Denise Shaw says, you know, the market mind games that we're playing with ourselves, that battle we have with ourselves, you know, that we're often not conscious of. So talking through your trading with a coach, with a performance coach, with a psychotherapist. You know, a lot of people I know work with psychotherapists, that get that out there so you start becoming aware of what is happening internally.
What I found, especially with the traders who are already doing incredibly well, they just need to talk. They just need to bounce it off another energy field, so to speak, and then they gain clarity just by talking it out. I don't even need to say anything. I just need to say, tell me more, you know, tell me more about that. There's a gap in your thinking. Should we explore that? And then they talk. So that's really easy coaching for me. But yeah. That's what you say, right? When you talk about it and you already have a certain level of awareness, you catch yourself like, oh, my God, did I just really say that? Wow.
Yeah. I've had people say, you know, Steve, thank you. You've really helped me. And I said, if I'm really honest, I didn't do an awful lot. You just talked and you then started reflecting on what you said, and I pointed it out to you, and you went away, and suddenly you're almost liberated from this very thing and you're trading better. It is as simple as that sometimes.
Yeah, I found that too.
Well, it's been fascinating talking with Mandy and bringing these topics to life. It's good to talk about them as we do and share our stories. And Steve and I are increasingly into storytelling and social mindfulness, if that's a good way of thinking about this. If you want to know about social mindfulness, the work of Mark Leonard is something to worth dipping into. a good friend of mine. But this concept that the more we feel just connected to people and, you know, understand that it's not just me, that others are going through this, and learn from that interaction and learn from actually understanding that stepping away and having a social conversation rather than just a market conversation. Yeah, just pay attention to those sorts of things. You know, I think that, and that's come about from this very human conversation with Mandy. And so it's always good to get the perspective of what's going on down south, as we call it, down under. And I like the emerging sort of emotional fitness story too. I do keep an eye on the edges of, so you tend to think, the US and the UK, but look at what other people are doing. You know, look at the fringe activity. That's where interesting things evolve. And I definitely see emotional fitness, kind of people can understand it. Yeah, you can kind of get it. It does what it says on the box. And I think it's a very good way of framing this. And I think, just linking back to Ken Long's conversation, we're ending this conversation with the comment that, you know, if you're going out there with your sword, don't forget your shield. You know, don't forget about your protection. So, Mandy, great to have you on, and we're delighted, and sorry to be cutting you slightly short today, but it's a busy day for us here in England, because it's 8 o'clock in the morning we're having this podcast, would you believe, listeners? So,
thank you.
Hopefully it sounded intact and that we were awake, because I was partially asleep at the beginning still.
You did well. No one noticed. We thought you were practicing mindfulness.
There you are.
Just maybe to add one more piece, when you said, you know, in terms of knowing that other people go through the same as we do or as the individual does, it takes away the shame that we have, because I think shame and guilt is such a big part of our industry. And so, again, I just wanted to acknowledge what you just said, to keep, you know, have someone that you can trust and that you can share your deepest shame with and know that it's okay, because they most probably did something stupid just the same. So, yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, lovely, Mandy. Mandy, it's been amazing having you on. Where can, just before we finish, where can people find out more about you? You know, people need to talk to coaches out there. You're one of the best coaches out there. So
thank you.
Where can they get hold of you?
Twitter is MPX_trader. And my website, I've got two websites. One is tradingpsychology.com.au and the other one is highperformancetrading.com.au, which was inspired by Steve Ward's book, High Performance Trading, because it was for me a real game changer when I actually learned about statistics, and that statistics can be fun and not painful. So, okay. That's the best
brilliant.
Places.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll put that on the show notes. So if anyone's listening, go on to the show notes on whichever podcast service you're using, or if you're on YouTube, just you'll see it down there. So, Mandy, honestly, it's a blessing for our audience to have you on. It really is.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And also that you got up early. So
thank you. Thank you for listening today. We would like to thank our podcast sponsorship partners, the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can find out more about our sponsors at our website, alpha-mind.net, or see the link in the episode description. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, provide world-beating technical analysis education programs. Alpha Mind podcast listeners can obtain a discount off the cost of their excellent home study course. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd appreciate it if you could leave a friendly review or provide a rating for the show on whichever podcast service you use. You can find out more about us at our website, alpha-mind.net. You can follow us on Twitter at AlphaMind101 and at AlphaMind102. And you can connect with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, on LinkedIn. You can also follow us and can check back over some of our past episodes on the alphamindpodcast.com. We wish you the best of luck in the markets. Have a good week.